Second Sam, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth.
You thought you said Acts.
First and Second Samuel. I changed my mind and I'm going to smack you.
Two-eyed Sammy.
Two-eyed Samuel.
Hey, Brad.
Sure.
Hey, babe.
Hey, babe.
23. No, it's 22 first. The reason this is important is because David, who was the type of Christ after the flesh, died on the Feast of Pentecost. Okay? So the chapter 22 was a psalm originally, it was sung. And then the second through seven verses of chapter 23 are the last words of David. So this is like the last words you hear, the last things you know before. Let's read it.
So he sang this song and he croaked. Gary, you never said it.
And David spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord had delivered him out of the hand of all of his enemies, and out of the hand of Saul. Now, 2 Samuel 22, 1. Now, can you hear what it means? The day of Pentecost, the death, the baptism is all the day that the Lord has delivered you out of the hand of all of your enemies, including the flesh, including your mind. It's so vital that you see this, that you do not have to negotiate with your mind any longer. You do not have to negotiate with your flesh. You don't have to give pain any credence. You don't have to give illness any credence. You don't have to give anything that's taking place any credence at all. We walk by faith. I mean, I'm a living testimony. You've got to hear this, and you've got to hear this real clear. If I gave myself over, if I let myself, I would be dead. I would stay in bed because I hurt so bad. I could not. And now, especially now with this dizziness. The dizziness, if I gave myself to the dizziness, I can't. I have to go to battle with it, not to prove I'm strong, but to say that by faith, this is not my life. It doesn't matter what happens to this dying hunk of flesh. It is not my life. And that's the meaning of the Feast of Pentecost. No more negotiating. The Feast of Pentecost, really, in one real sense, is the time. It's first the giving of the law on Mount Sinai, but it's the overcoming of the evil one. Now, and David spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord had delivered him out of the hand of all of his enemies. And out of the hand of Saul. And what was Saul here? Saul was the type of the flesh, or everything that the sensory battle, the sensory activity. And he said, the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, the God of my rock, in him only will I trust. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my high tower and my refuge, my Savior. Thou savest me from violence. I will call on the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies. When the waves of death compassed me, the floods of ungodly men made me afraid, the sorrows of hell compassed me about, the snares of death prevented me. In my distress I called upon the Lord and cried to my God, and he did hear my voice out of his temple, and my cry did enter into his ears. Then the earth shook. Now that's what. When I know that God When I pray, if I know that God hears me, then I've already received the answer to my prayer. And the fruit of that prayer is the shaking of all things, the shaking of the earth, because that's the wave offering, the tenupa. Can you understand? You control the destiny of the earth. If you understand what this says, then the wave offering is there, and the earth will shake in its course. Nothing else is important. Nothing else matters. The earth shook and trembled. The foundations of heaven moved and shook because he was wroth. There went up a smoke out of his nostrils and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. This was written 980 years before Christ. He bowed the heavens also and came down. Do you know, did any of you read Tom Siegfried's column in the Monday paper? He's the science editor. He said this incredible thing. You know what I teach that at the end everything in the universe has to pass through a dot that's smaller than your eye can see. Well, you have to if that's true, then you have to think about where is the energy, where is the force? I mean, mechanistically, and from a physics standpoint, there has to be a it has to be able to happen. Do you understand? Because God's not going to violate himself to cause the end to come. And so, since matter cannot be created or destroyed, then something has to transpire. There has to be something that I was missing in the transaction, and it's this. It's really neat. There is zero force in the universe. The net force of the universe is zero. Because gravity is the negative force, and the expansion of the universe is positive. But at the end, they reach this mystical point, this tenupa, when the whole universe shakes, and then all force in the universe returns to zero because the gravity is pulling back. It's the negative, and it's the expansion of the universe is the positive, and they reach the point of no return. In an instant, at the twinkling of an eye, everything in the universe collapses faster than the speed of 100,000 times faster than the speed of light.
It's like taking a rubber band.
It's the same thing. This was so important for my own, there has to be a net zero energy in the universe. You understand it? A little bit.
Nobody knows when we finish stretching.
It's mighty soon.
That universe has very bad stretch marks.
What are you saying?
I mean, you prefer rubber band analogy. I mean,
we're getting very quick to the end.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to say.
If pulling the rubber band out like that slowly was the speed of light,
okay.
Letting it go is how fast it's going to come back.
Okay. Yeah, I can.
Faster.
100,000 times faster than the speed of light. So that's why we conduct ourselves as if the end were now. That's why we must experience the end now, because that's what causes the renewing of our mind. And in fact, if you believe this, if you believe what the scriptures say, a body of people are the ones that are controlling when he lets go of the rubber band. Remember what I said about that freaked you out? That it's the other analogy is that the seven seals on the ark, when the ark is opened, nothing in the ark but death and destruction and the end. You open the ark, you open the seals by understanding the seals. You slowly understand each of the seven seals. He's driving back from Seattle, and I'm teaching him the meaning of the seals, and I told him that... So
was the way you said, do you guys want to open this last one? I mean, I was like, oh,
God. do you understand what I'm saying? This is really neat stuff. Are you dead?
No one came flying through the window.
Okay. Then the earth shook and trembled, the foundations of heaven moved and shook because he was wroth. There went up a smoke out of his nostrils and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. He bowed the heavens, how do you say that? Bowed or bowed?
Bowed.
Oh, Gary, why don't you just sit in the chair?
Bowed.
Bowed.
You have to be bowed because he bowed down. He bowed the heavens and bowed the heavens.
How do you bowed?
Bowed the heavens.
How do you bowed?
Bowed.
Like rainbow.
Bowed is with the holy ball.
No, it could be a bowed.
No, like a bow and arrow. He bowed it.
Oh, like
bowed.
Oh, he bowled a
verb.
So he can slide down.
You don't bow an arrow.
You don't bow.
He B-O-W-E-D'd it.
Ducky science is good, bad.
He B-O-W-E-D the heavens also, and came down, and darkness was under his feet. And he rode upon a cherub and did fly, and he was seen upon the wings of the wind. That's pretty neat. That's pretty good imagery here. How come I haven't read this before?
A cherub is a little kid, right?
No.
It's an angel that can kick your ass.
I'm kidding.
It's an angel
that can kick your ass. It's one of these little porcelain things with the big eyes.
Right. Or the things they paint on the ceiling all over Italy.
It's a troll. Yeah, precious.
A whispering doll.
He made darkness pavilions round about him. What?
We've read this before because we talked about 13, about the stuff, the plague.
He made darkness pavilions round about him, dark waters and thick clouds of the skies. Through the brightness before him were coals of fire kindled. The Lord thundered from heaven. The Most High uttered his voice. He sent out arrows and scattered them, lightning and discomfited them. And the channels, you like discomfited?
Lightning and discomfited.
May I continue?
Yes.
The Lord thundered from heaven. The Most High uttered his voice. He sent arrows and scattered them, lightning and discomfited them. And the channels of the sea appeared. The fountains of the world were discovered at the rebuking of the Lord, at the blast of the breath of his nostrils. He sent from above. He took me. He drew me out of my many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy, and from them that hated me. For they were too strong for me. They prevented me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth into a large place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. Again, this is the testimony of Christ, and it's the testimony of Christ in us. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. With that, you know he's got to be talking about Christ, right? According to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me, and as for his statutes, I did not depart from them. I was also upright before him, and have kept myself from mine own iniquity. Let me read that one again. I have kept myself from mine own iniquity. I have kept myself from Rick's iniquity. Therefore the Lord hath recompensed me according to my righteousness, according to my cleanness in his eyesight. With the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful. With the upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. With the pure thou wilt show thyself pure. And with the froward thou wilt show thyself unsavory. Now what is froward?
Froward.
It's self-seeking.
Oh.
Open yourselves.
Real arrogant.
Forward is it means stiff-necked. It means the opposite of humility. It means going in your own way. But you understand the idea? With the merciful, he will show himself merciful. With the pure, he will show himself pure. With the froward, he will show himself unsavory. That's another thing you don't want, right? We've got a lot of list of things that we don't. We don't want God to show himself as unsavory to you.
No way.
I say I must have been very froward lately.
Huh? Yes, you've been very froward lately. And the afflicted people thou wilt save, but thine eyes are upon the haughty, that thou mayest bring them down. For thou art my lamp, O Lord, and the Lord will lighten my darkness. For by thee I have run through a troop. By my God have I leaped over a wall. And as for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tested or tried. He is a buckler to all them that trust in him. For who is God save the Lord?
What's a buckler?
It's what holds all your armor together.
Hmm?
Oh, yeah.
Very good, Harry.
Is it ever on a ship?
Do what?
A buckler. Is it ever on a ship?
No.
It's a manly thing.
It's a swash thing.
Okay. It's not a swash thing, but I got something that's really important. Does anybody know how to spell? First of all, do you know how to spell conniption? And secondly, do you know what it is?
It's a fit.
I know what it is.
It's a conniption fit. But what is the conniption?
I don't know.
Good question. It's like
a
person.
A growing.
Don't have a conniption.
A nervous.
What does conniption mean, though?
Nervous, growing, building.
No.
No? Why don't you tell us?
Let's ask Mr. Language Person.
I don't know.
Seizure.
Where's Joe?
Ask my mom.
No, it's that guy you like.
Is it in the dictionary?
I can't. I can't figure out how to spell it.
C-A-N-I.
No. How many spellings do we have?
We have a division among the bodies.
See what you started.
Why don't we go look it up on the spell checker?
We don't know
how to access that.
This is a conniption.
This is a conniption discussion.
I'm a connip plan.
What was the thrust of all that?
For who is God save the Lord? And who is a rock save our God? God is my strength and power, and he maketh my way perfect. Now, you know what perfect means in the Greek and the Hebrew?
Tested.
Completely tested. God is my strength and my power. He maketh my way perfect. He maketh my feet like hinds' feet, and setteth me upon my high places. That means that the high place activity is transformed. It's transformed. He teacheth my hands to war. So that a bow of steel is broken by mine arms.
It's a pretty macho song here.
Not really.
Amen. What does that mean? Is
that just means strong?
It means there's no. You know what? What's the word for arm? In
zero.
Hebrew.
Zero.
Zero. What's the word for seed?
Zero.
Seed.
Seed.
Like the seed or generation or heritage is the same as the arm or the strength.
The same word.
Thou hast also given me the shield of thy salvation, and thy gentleness has made me great. Thou hast enlarged my steps under me, so that my feet did not slip. I have pursued mine enemies and destroyed them, and not turned again until I have had consumed them. I have consumed them and wounded them, and they could not arise. Yea, they are fallen under my feet. Now, who is he talking about?
Jesus.
ones.
Your enemies.
Board of Elders.
This isn't the call to go to war against, like, this isn't like, this isn't the call to go to war against the Swedes. And I have consumed them and wounded them, that they could not arise, yea, they are fallen under my feet, for thou hast girded me with strength to battle. Them that rose up against me, thou hast subdued under me. Thou hast also given me the necks of mine enemies, that I might destroy them that hate me. They looked, but there was none to save, even unto the Lord, but he answered them not. Then did I beat them as small as the dust of the earth. I did stamp them as the mire of the street, and did spread them abroad. Thou also hast delivered me from the strivings of my people, and hast kept me to be the head of the heathen. A people which I knew not shall serve me. Strangers shall submit themselves unto me. As soon as they hear, they shall be obedient unto me. Strangers shall fade away, and they shall be afraid out of their close places. The Lord liveth, and blessed be my rock, and exalted be the God of the rock of my salvation. It is God that avengeth me, and that bringeth down the people under me, and that bringeth me forth from mine enemies. Thou also hast lifted me up high above them that rose up against me. Thou hast delivered me from the violent man. Therefore will I give thanks unto thee, O Lord, among the heathen. I will sing praises unto thy name. He is the tower of salvation for his king, and showeth mercy to his anointed, unto David and to his seed forevermore. Now these be the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, said, and the man who was raised up on high, the anointed of the God of Jacob, and the sweet psalmist of Israel, said, the Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and his word was in my tongue. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. He shall be as the light of the morning when the sun ariseth, even a morning without clouds, as the tender grass springeth out of the earth, by clear shining after rain. Although my house be not so with God, yet he hath made me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things, and sure. For this is all my salvation, and all my desire, although he make it not to grow. But the sons of Belial shall be all of them as thorns thrust away, because they cannot be taken with hands. But the man that shall touch them must be fenced with iron and the staff of a spear, and they shall be utterly burned with fire in the same place. Well, this occurred, this Feast of Pentecost was fulfilled on a morning without clouds. And it transformed, in Peter's case, an ignorant fisherman without any education to one of the most feared men of the world, one of the most brilliant, eloquent men in the world. If you read Peter's speech in the second chapter of the book of Acts, it's without peer in literature. It's perfectly constructed. The logic is step by step perfect. This was an uneducated fisherman. But his tongue was moved with the power of the Holy Spirit, and he was willing that all things be shaken. Now, all that God asks from us is we be willing. My people are willing in the day of my power. That's willing to become as a little child. Willing to put away cynicism. Willing to put away skepticism. Willing to put away all idolatries. Willing to put away all ideas of the way things should be the next moment. Willing to be molded as a potter's clay in the hand of the living God. That's what the Feast of Pentecost is about. peace. Read those things. I think you'll find them interesting. The comparisons of the law and the spirit, the giving of the law and the giving of the spirit. Are you guys healed?
I found out that, you know, it's like paper, scissors, rock. They're always rock.
Paper covers rock.
Rock beats against rock.
What is 6? The son of Belial shall be all in the thorns because of him taking my hands.
The word Jacob it goes to the type. Esau is always the flesh, and it's always the thorn. And the flesh can't be taken by hand because it's. So it's Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. Belial is Satan. Yeah, sons of Belial.
The first thing what was said to Rick, I found that pretty hard. I'm still wrestling with that. About him, being responsible for other people leaving the group, felt that pretty hard. And Sunday, whenever Tanine came over to the house, and she came in, she said, she wanted to speak to somebody. And she said, ain't nobody on the block. I ain't got nobody to speak to. I felt real bad about that. It was as though I was nobody. And I normally I would have blowed it off, but you know, I liked Tyler, and that really hurt me. Probably somebody else wouldn't have probably bothered me. And it made me feel like a third-class citizen or something around there. I'm often, you know, I see myself here in other people's eyes as a second or third class citizen. Like I said, though, you know, I don't have the capacity to sit down and reason with anybody on anything of any importance. And I really felt that when she came on, I really felt that.
The reason that I think that some may see that is because when people see you, they only see one side of you. They only see you being mad at something. They don't see you in the times where you're just laughing or having fun or you know, just talking or being broken or whatever, just being the total you. They just see the one aspect. And I believe it probably takes a long time for that to be shown. But if there's any, I mean, that's the only reason that would be.
Well, I find it unacceptable.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I mean. You don't, you only share the bad stuff. You don't share the good stuff.
I don't know what that means, bad stuff, good stuff.
Well, you only share here the things that make you mad. You don't share the things that give you joy.
At home, you're all kinds of different moods. I mean, you know, you're happy sometimes, and you're joking around sometimes, and what he's saying is, and you probably don't realize it, I mean, when you come here, a lot of times all people see is you angry about something.
I mean, and I see you differently because you and I talk a lot, but
yeah.
What most people see is you mad at something, or you upset at something, and so it intimidates them about being willing to open up.
And it's weird, you know, because it's less than, probably less than 10% of your personality, or even that, you know, I mean, you're not that way all the time.
I find it hard. I find it hard to because I mean, I don't think anybody really tries to understand that this is a mad ass nigga fucking bitch.
Well, that's not true.
No, I mean, that's what I see.
I know, but I'm saying that then. It's the thing. It's the thing that we just read. To the, you know, it's to the merciful. He will show himself merciful. To the mad, he will show himself mad. I mean, it's the, and that's reflected in us. And it's how we feel. If we are mad, untrustworthy, untrustful, then. That's what people, that's how we'll be show, that's how we show ourselves to people. I mean, I don't see you that way because I know you, and you and I talk a lot, and Rick doesn't see you that way. But I would wager that most people see you as, I mean, and the reason, and you're not any of those things, but you only, for some reason here with the majority of the people, you only show the mad side of you.
I have to believe that has to do with the fact that we've talked about this, that there are a lot of people in this room that you don't think like you. I mean, you really don't.
No, it's not. I know.
Well, okay, but I'm just
for
saying
me,
that,
I know
that. That I know that that's the way you feel. And, you know, again, those things can be worked out.
Yeah, but it's got to come to the point where... where there's sufficient freedom for you, for not just you, but any of us. I mean, it's just, this is an area that we have to be able to say, you know, it's real easy for most of us now to say, God, you made me mad. But it's very still real difficult for us to say, you know, without seeming like Sally Syrup or something. Oh, you really, I really appreciate you. You know, I mean, there's a breaking down that has to occur in us that, you know, it's like today. Let me just give you the only thing I can think about it that happened today was with Linda, the woman. She has multiple sclerosis and it's hard for her to talk and hard for her to communicate, but you can tell when you spend any time with her, she's a brilliant woman. And all of a sudden it just struck me how insensitive we were as a people here to the handicapped. It was like the Third World War for her to get into the restroom. And I just started crying. We've just got to be constantly aware. I mean, I don't want us to go to take sensitivity training, although I'd like to send Harry there, But from the standpoint of the things you say, Delvin, you've got to see that you only choose to show one side of you to some people.
Well, believe it or not, I see a sweet side of
Delvin. Because you know me without bias.
Yeah, but
I don't know what you know now.
I know there is. Yeah.
Well, whenever I came in that day, it went through my mind. I thought, why didn't I talk to Delvin? But there was part of me too, Delvin, that I don't know what to say to you sometimes. Because I feel like I don't know. You'd be like me going to another Bible study and just talking to someone. Even though they're there, so I really don't, you and I don't communicate.
Yeah, I find that a tragedy.
Yeah.
I can't share those. And what I see is that how the hell can I sit up and eat with people I know what they are in their mind? I mean, it's just...
I know what?
I'm saying I can't see myself when I come in the room, in this room, or to the table, to eat or anything. To me, when I come in, I can't be comfortable. I can't be anything because to me, I see people as this militant, nigga don't have anything, and he thinks he's arrogant, blah blah blah. That's what I see and that's what I perceive.
Dylan, when you come in
and
You can come in and sit down.
Okay. And for, I mean, nothing arrogant. I mean, I'm very seldom where I just totally misinterpret a situation. Just blow it. I very seldom just misinterpret the picture altogether. So I know it's some validity that for you even tell me that it's not valid.
Well, that's, I mean, that's not even the issue. The issue is that your opinions become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You come in feeling like that, so people react like that because you kind of impose it. That makes sense.
Sometimes there's this quality of resentment in you. It's really weird because I don't feel that way when I'm talking to you on the street. When you come in here, I feel like you resent everybody.
It's me and you, and there's no, you have no ally. For me, I know that it's me and you one-on-one, and there's no one to support you or anything. If I say something, you have to deal with me.
Well, I want you to try something. Yeah. I want you to hear this real carefully, that the abandonment of self has to be total. It can't, and the cross has to do its work totally without regard to what anything else that transpires. And there can't be an abandonment of self yet a suspicion that I'm being resented. It doesn't work that way. That's just the twisted side of self-seeking. The cross has to come total so that the abandonment, taking no thought for or about self, is total. And in that freedom, nobody sees anything except Christ in you, the hope of glory. I mean, you've got to see that there's the element of self-seeking if you're thinking that people are thinking something about you. Forget it. Fuck it. Abandon yourself. Pick up your cross and follow him. Abandonment means taking no thought of or about or for self under any condition. No matter what the condition. No matter who else is wrong. It's the abandonment of self. And it has to be transpired. It has to take place. It doesn't matter who of us it is. If self is in the picture, if self is in the sentence, we're speaking the wrong sentence.
There's always that feeling of separation there.
Yeah.
And Doug was teaching in the morning Bible studies, he came to convict
of sin and of righteousness
and judgment. And it's like when I do that, when I try to get into judging what people think of, or thinking how I'm doing, or what I'm doing, or if I'm doing it.
You get to be a pain in the ass when you do that.
Hurt above and beyond anything else, it was something that hurt, you know, hurt me. And just the fact that you can talk in those terms now in the group just blows me away, because I know it means, I mean, a lot of water has crossed under the bridge for that to be the case. So I really feel like the process that we're all talking about, it's already begun. I mean, the desire that other people have for closeness with you and the desire that you have towards them, I see it already taking place. In spite of everything you've done.
Well, the point is, he that is joined to the Lord is one spirit. There is no separation. Any separation is an illusion. And that's why I said we have to bring our judgments and responses about each other and about the group to a different level. And it has to have as the predicate that there is no separation. That's the first predicate. He that is joined to the Lord is one spirit. If I'm joined to the Lord and you're joined to the Lord, there's no separation. It can't be. Therefore, if any illusion or anything that looks like separation is a lie. Now, then, if that's the case, then if we walk in that light as he is in that light that's caused by the Feast of Pentecost, then we have fellowship one with another. If there's any other basis of fellowship, it will fall. If there's any other basis of relationships, it will fall. But it has to be, the cross has to be the basis of the relationship. I mean, all of us have to face the idea that I mean, and Harry gets busted on this 15 times a day. The moment that Harry becomes the subject of his sentence, he knows he's wrong. The moment Gary becomes the subject of his sentence, he knows he's wrong. The moment Ollie becomes the subject of his sentence, he knows he's wrong. And that's universal. Abandon ourselves, pick up our cross, and let's have Pentecost.